and the stock markets take a little bit of a breather. The bloodletting was severe over the past two sessions, clearly. And today we get a little bit of a respite. Very little change here today for the major U.S. indices. Ominous though that is, if today was the day to rally them back, they could have and didn't. We have a bit of standstill, which brings us to the question of where the next move is, because it is probably not in stocks, at least at the moment. Now, maybe we get another move tomorrow, but we have in front of us perhaps the next move entirely outside the equities market altogether. Welcome, this is Macro Money. I'm Ilya Spivak, head of Global Macro here at Tasty Live, and we're going to consider the possibility that the next place to look for action in these markets is in the currency space. And the mover du jour there may well be the British pound. We have some major economic data that's coming up on the docket here, UK CPI, inflation. And what we're going to do here is we're going to break down what is expected, why it might be a significant market mover, and then get right into the hands-on and the practical. What are the key levels? What needs to happen in order for those levels to activate? What the trade setup might actually be. So let's begin with a bit of stage setting. These are the expectations as we have them. This is UK CPI broken down by spending category. And you can see the expectation here is we're going to come down to 3.1% on headline CPI. Now, this would be a very significant improvement over where we've been before. By comparison, the last time we were at 3.1% was September of 2021. This would be a pullback from 3.4. Needless to say, we also see, as we have in a lot of the numbers we've been seeing out of the Eurozone, a broadening of disinflation. So if we look at, for example, where we were in the latter half of 2022, we can see there was a lot here that was stuck in energy prices. And that, of course, makes sense with the Russian invasion of Ukraine. There was a massive upswell there. Then we can see into most of 2023, that was a story about food. That's this purple area here. So while energy prices started to recede, food was the big holdout here. And as we look at where we are currently, energy is now a source of disinflation, both in terms of the fuels component here and the transport component as well. And food is coming to much more reasonable levels. So here's where we are as of February here. And you can see food was the leader basically since April of last year. It has fallen from the perch. So the dark bars here, the numbers from February, the lighter ones, the preceding month in January. And you can see food coming in significantly from its contribution of 83 percentage points to overall headline CPI down to 0.6. And the two big areas where we have still a bit of a lingering holdout are discretionary spending areas. So recreation, hospitality. Now, both of these cases, the question is more of the business cycle. In the case of food, it is of global trends. And as we've looked at with the Eurozone before, in fact, I left the Eurozone on here, their CPI numbers, just so we can see the parallel of what's going on there versus the UK. The UK here in the red, the Eurozone in the dark blue, and the UN's gauge of global food costs in the light. And you can see that there seems to be about a 7-month lag between how long it takes CPI to see reflection of what happens in this global food index. Very importantly, this is not a year-on-year reading, this global food index. This is the index itself. So these are actual level changes. So we can see that, for example, here, it's not that global food prices are growing at a slower rate. It's that they're actually moving lower. They're declining. And they've been declining since basically the early part of 2022. But it's about a seven-month lag between that and when they show up in CPI. So you can see here, there's probably still more tail for food costs to diminish as a driver of inflation, because there's all this here that still needs to get baked in that hasn't appeared in CPI yet. So there's further to go. Now, on these discretionary spending components, much of this is probably sensitive to weak economic growth. So if the economy weakens, people want to spend less on recreation, restaurants, and hotels, because obviously those are not sort of in your Maslow hierarchy of needs, the top areas of where spending is going to go as a priority. You probably have a lot more spending going to your basic everyday cost of living expenses. This is the part that gets cut first. This is what's optional. And so if you look at the jobs data that came out of the UK this week, you get a bit of a sense of how this could come undone. So just a mere day ago, we had UK jobs data come out. It's a little bit lagged. So this is data for the month of February, and it is just coming out. But what we saw here was sobering. So if we see what this actually comports to showing us, obviously we can see that the economy is losing jobs, but to put a number on it, that's 156,000 jobs lost. That would be the worst since August of last year. So you can see that right here. The same thing happens, and with the same reference point, for the unemployment rate. It jumps now for a third consecutive month and goes back up to 4.2%. That's the highest again since August of last year, and just a little bit off the peak at 4.3. So we're looking at a situation here where the labor market seems to be deteriorating. That's a recipe for consumers to want to spend less on optional things. In fact, if we look at some more timely data here, this is the PMI data set for March, we can see that this is not just a flash in the pan kind of thing in February, that this is likely to continue. Note here, services begin to cool in February and continue to cool into March. What this does, despite the fact that we have a return to growth for the manufacturing sector for the first time, basically since the middle of 2022, is that the overall flattens. The composite index flattens, and actually in February into March, it narrowly starts to slow. What this tells us is, of course, that it is the service sector that matters, and this is not surprising. For most major economies, the service sector is a much bigger deal, a much larger share of overall growth than is manufacturing. The UK is no different. And that when services cools, we have this sort of a flatlining and a slow decline in economic performance. Now, of course, where does spending on things like recreation, hotels, and hospitality, where does that live? Obviously in services. And so that you're seeing cooling there is, of course, telling you that it is indeed these dynamics right here that stand to come in once that gathers some momentum. And so With that in mind, the Bank of England ostensibly has ample room here to say, much like the ECB before it, which is looking at an almost identical setup here. Food was the lead. It has given way to hospitality. The ECB has very clearly told us the story. The Swiss National Bank has actually taken the extra step because they only meet four times a year. So they had fewer opportunities to make a change in policy. They actually went ahead and started cutting. The ECB told us June, almost certainly the cuts begin. For the Bank of England, we now have round three, their turn, to see inflation data that suggests that disinflation has legs, that these things still holding it up are either already receding and are likely to recede further or are already weak. So if we look at the impacts from these categories here, food, clothing, obviously we just talked about energy and transport. These things are already coming in, though they are, and by all accounts, they seem like to continue in that direction. So how does that land us for our Bank of England calculus? Well, we can see here, we're at 5.25% now for the target bank rate. The curve has moved to a more hawkish setting relative to the last two meetings of the Bank of England's MPC, Monetary Policy Committee, that sets policy. So in February, we had a more dovish view. In March, that view got revised to something less dovish. In the current pricing, it's even less dovish. So what we see here is the first cut is showing up seemingly sometime between August and September. So by August, it is almost fully baked in. These two basis points are probably something of a rounding error. By September, they're definitely in. And those three basis points are something of a rounding error. So we're seeing the first cut somewhere here. And then it looks like we're angling for the second, but not quite there by the end of the year at this point. We would need to see this at 4.75 or lower to consider that there might be that second cut. So if we look at the total tally, we can see now we're baking in 37 basis points for the year. That comes up to give us that first cut of 25 basis points fully baked in and about a 48% chance of a second one by December. So there is seemingly a shift here in a more hawkish direction, but as we've just seen from UK economic data, it's not really for UK-related reasons because all the dynamics there seem to suggest that actually the Bank of England is very much on a pathway to be able to sell the start of stimulus. So what's going on here? Why is the market moving this way? Well, we know that we've been watching evaporating Fed rate cut odds because U.S. economic data has been outperforming relative to forecasts since the beginning of the year. We know that this has moved Fed policy odds from seeing 150 basis points in rate cuts at the start of the year to now only seeing about 35, which is very, very close to where we are in the UK. But when we have these kinds of shifts for the Fed outlook, that necessarily echoes elsewhere. Why? Because when we consider that, according to the Bank of International Settlements, 88%, give or take, of global monetary transactions are settled in the US dollars, then any kind of shifts in the Fed outlook that then move yields, move the Treasuries market, and give you a sense, okay, now borrowing dollars is going to be more expensive because there's going to be fewer cuts, that bids up yields everywhere. Because the cost of borrowing dollars, given how important dollars are as the lubricant for global economic activity, a rise in those borrowing costs is a rise in borrowing costs generally, everywhere. Because all economic activity, or almost all economic activity, is sensitive to dollar financing costs because commodities are baked in dollars, global banks tend to correspond and transact in dollars, even when there is a bilateral transaction to be made between non-USD denominated counterparties. It still tends to run through the SWIFT bank correspondence system, which is priced in dollars. And so the dollar is the conduit through which all of this occurs, which is how you get to 88%, which is obviously an outsized number. The U.S. economy is about a quarter of global GDP, but almost 90% of global monetary transactions are settled in dollars. So what this looks like is less so an indication of what's occurring in the U.K. domestically, more so an indication of what is happening to interest rate futures, because interest rate markets are being moved by the Fed. And not just in the U.S., but globally. And what we saw in spades out of the Eurozone, especially over the past week, is when local economic data comes out or local developments occur that remind markets that they have local central banks and local dynamics, then those things start to diverge from the Fed. And so what we've seen, for example, in the Eurozone is we, of course, got a very dovish ECB and weaker than expected inflation numbers. So we've seen that since, let's call it, give or take, April the 11th, we've seen something of a divergence. ECB monetary policy expectations have moved to a more dovish setting, whereas what we see from the Fed has only become more hawkish over the very same period. At best, it's held around 35, 36 basis points. And of course, against that backdrop, the euro has absolutely tumbled. So the idea here would be that if you get soft CPI data out of the UK, a similar thing occurs. Local flavor begins to return into this forecast, and you start to say, right, this has moved largely for Fed-related reasons into this more hawkish direction, but actually the Bank of England is going to go ahead of the Fed and harder when it comes to rate cuts. Now, you've already seen that the British pound is coming down relative to the dollar because the dollar has been generally stronger, both for risk aversion reasons and hotter CPI, fewer Fed rate cuts reasons. We've taken out this initial support right here, basically just above the 125 figure on the 6B contract, but the sell-off has not been nearly as dramatic as some of the other dollar pairs, and certainly not as dramatic as the euro. And so what you see here is perhaps some latent opportunity for catch-up. This range right here was holding all the way back to November of last year, and it's now been fairly conclusively cracked. In fact, we can see the subsequent candle after the breakdown here attempts to retest this and fails. The next support level that we're looking at here, 2342 to 84 or so. If we can get through this, then the way lower seems to lead down to a test below 121 with relatively little along the way. Really no critical, unmistakable levels between about the mid-123s and almost down to 121 at this point. So what this would set up is quite a bit of room for weakness. Now, we should keep in mind that there is some risk of an upside surprise. You can see UK economic data has been performing a little bit better relative to forecasts recently. And so that could maybe set us up for a little bit of a hotter CPI number, or at least a less low CPI number. Let's call it 3.2 instead of 3.1, 3.3, something like this. If that were to be the case, then the pound might bounce. And so what we would be looking for at that juncture is for 125 and change here to hold. So for this bottom here to hold, let's call it 125 up to maybe 125.20, 125.30, something like this. If this holds on a retest, well, that's just looking like a better selling opportunity. But of course, if we break back into here and find a foothold, then back to the drawing board we go, because then bearish momentum will have been short-circuited. But what this seems to set up as a kind of path of least resistance is either a CPI number that's maybe slightly higher, but ultimately tells us that the Bank of England is going to move ahead of the Fed. That would be the sort of ideal scenario if you want to be a seller, because that maybe gets you up here and holds to give you a better level to start selling. And for the record, I'm short. I've been short for a bit here. So I'm at this point not so much looking to enter as I am looking to add. I got short at 126.25, which was right around here. So on this break here and the retest thereafter. So I'm looking at this for an opportunity to add, but the calculus there to initiate is almost certainly the same. For a weaker than expected number, well, you might just skip straight to breaking this level, and then the trade would be a break over here down into here. And then, of course, if the number is substantially hotter than expected and this gets a significant revision higher and follows through, well, then we're back to the drawing board on that. But either way, we probably get a significant amount of volatility out of the British pound over this next day in front of us. And that is macro money for today. As ever, we are here Monday through Thursday, right after Overtime, which is a show that I co-host with Dylan Radigan and Chris Vecchio, looking at the Wall Street close and where we might be headed thereafter. I am also on with Chris for Futures Power Hour on Friday, on with Tom and Victor for First Call on Sundays. Now on with Victor for The Price of Truth on Wednesdays. Come and join us for that. I'll be there tomorrow. And writing for the News and Insights portion of TastyLive.com, as well as opining sporadically on the platform formerly known as Twitter, at Ilya Spivak. That was a mouthful. Thanks very much for joining. Happy trading. See you tomorrow.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be, trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing